free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net to see our past show archives and upcoming shows. Today is September 10th, 2007, and our guest today is David W. Lee. He's with the Society for Sustainable Mobility. They are coming up with an open-source green vehicle project that would get 100 miles per gallon with a mid-sized Kernel hybrid electric SUV. Seats seven passengers, reach top speeds of 120 miles per hour, that's 160 kilometers per hour. With serious engineering supporting it, the Kernel is designed from the ground up to be two generations ahead of the hybrid cars today. Now, how's that for an undertaking? Welcome to the show, David.
Hello, Alan. Thanks for the overview. It was really, really great. Let me just give you a bit of background of SSM first. How's that?
Sure.
We have about 130 engineers around the world right now. They're all volunteers, including myself. So I'm also a volunteer, which represent a huge array of engineering disciplines, including mechanical, electrical, aerospace, etc. And they come from many different countries. Most of us are in the United States and Holland, and there are other engineers scattered around the world in Germany, Australia, Canada, Taiwan, and Hong Kong. And I can almost say the sun never sets on the SSM. It really started out in December of 2005 as the Open Source Green Vehicle Project. And then we later on expanded our charter into the Society for Sustainable Mobility, or SSM. We have three parts in our charter. One is to promote open design in automotive engineering. Second is to develop sustainable technology, including the 100 miles per gallon Kernel vehicle that you're talking about. And also a business plan to try to bring these products to the market. We realized that, you know, oftentimes the problem with alternative fuel vehicles or alternative fuel technologies in general are not with the technologies themselves. That's not the problem. The technologies themselves are great, but the technology insertion process into the market could sometimes hinder this type of development. And there are literally hundreds of these vehicle platforms on the market today. For example, Camry is a platform, right? It's owned by Toyota. But the proprietary nature of these platforms are really hindering the commercialization of the latest and greatest sustainable technologies. That these technologies could have a major effect on our environment and our quality of life. So how do we tackle that? That goes back to the reason why, these are problems in the first place. Say you have a technology that gives you 100 miles per gallon, right? But you can't get it on one of these platforms, then your technology is pretty much dead in essence. And you really have to ask yourself, how many of these platforms are really non-profit in nature? I mean, right now there is none, essentially.
Correct.
Now, Toyota, GM, and Ford, they have invested billions of dollars in their new hybrid vehicle lines that, you know, gives you, say, 35 miles per gallon, right?
The whole commercial market model is to glom onto your technology with proprietary tenacity, say no one gets to see what we're doing, we're the first to market, no one figures out what we're doing for a long time, so we can keep an edge on the market and have our competitive edge. But the open source model, as shown in the computer world, actually can be superior to that model by opening it up for a wide number of people, multidisciplinary approach, to get the best information available on the subject. But how in a commercial world where somebody's got to put up a lot of money to build this thing, to build a plant, to manufacture this thing, to get it into the marketplace, how are you going to do that?
Well, yes, that funding is obviously a concern for us. Now, we have two approaches. Now, plan A is obviously we could license these technologies out to other companies who are willing to take the risk and build it themselves. And that really achieves our goal anyway, right? We don't have to build the cars ourselves. But worst come to worst, we can still build it ourselves. We build our own factories. We have our own capital money to roll out these vehicles into the market. I guess the licensing terms in our open design license is really designed to work with the commercial entity so that they can get profit from being part of this. But at the vehicle level, it will be non-profit. Does that make sense?
So the brain trust is non-profit, but the implementation end is for-profit?
We create a lot of specification and design data in the non-profit world in an open source manner. And if a commercial entity wants to, you know, build some parts and sell it as part of a vehicle, they could, and they could keep part of their proprietary, they could keep part of the design proprietary, as long as, you know, the interfaces to the vehicle doesn't change. They can also modify part of our design. And the rules are really to adopt the same licensing, make sure that the new design actually adopts the same licensing agreement and make them available to the public as well. Sometimes we specify the interfaces, sometimes the manufacturer wants different interfaces, but the rules are that they have to disclose the same the interface that they use to us so that we can design our cars to.
What kind of time frame are you looking at to implement your first model?
Actually, you go to osgv.org, you will find a more detailed schedule on the website.
OSGV, four letters, OSGV, is that correct?
osgv.org, that's an open source green vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
There you can find a more detailed schedule of our production plan. And in 2009, we plan to enter the XPRIZE, Automotive XPRIZE contest.
Mm-hmm.
By then, we'll have a working prototype of our kernel electric vehicle.
Mm-hmm. And we spoke with another entity who has applied for that XPRIZE that thinks he's going to win the prize. He's got he's using a hydraulic system that's super efficient. He's thinking 130 miles per gallon.
Which is possible. I mean, 100 miles per gallon is well within the envelope of the current technology set. If you put the right mix of technologies into a vehicle, you can reach 100 miles per gallon. That is not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the SSM is different in the way that we have all the expertise in in designing the new vehicles from scratch ourselves, not like some of the contestants who are only focused on part of a drivetrain, for example, or a battery, for example. SSM, we have enough expertise here to build a vehicle from the ground up, including the frame, the suspension, the engine, and the drivetrain, the control mechanism, etc.
Yeah, there's also next week I'm going to be speaking with Cyrus Irani of High Kinesis, who has a technology that actually may work well either as a counterpart, an open source counterpart, or integrating that into your system. I'm not sure how that would work, but there's some really good concepts there. I don't want to go into a whole bunch of distractions here of other things you might consider, because there are an endless number of things we could, you know, go through in an itemized list of components of a vehicle that, if implemented into one system, could be a real killer system. But I think it would be worthwhile to just mention that, you know, that we here at PES Network are continually covering cutting-edge fuel efficiency technologies and hybrid engine, different clean engine technologies, that it would be good for somebody from your group to kind of keep an eye on what we're putting in our news and putting in our directory, because that could there's bound to be things come along that are going to be beneficial to you and your project of what we're covering. So I'd just like to, you know, put in a little plug on our end toward what you're trying to accomplish in your project.
Oh, we're always looking out for new technologies. If you read through our literature about the kernel electric vehicle, the vehicle architecture itself allows a very flexible the propulsion system is actually separated from the power source. So if we can find a suitable power generator, we could actually use that as a power source. In other words, if High Kinesis or some other companies would like to contribute or be a partner of SSM, we would be happy to work with them. And we really believe in the openness of the design strategy, so that, you know, other people can contribute to that as well, including some competitors.
Now, my experience with open sourcing energy technologies is that you run into a gamut of openness. On the one extreme, you have a person who puts a design out there that is completely open. They don't care who makes money on it. They're not interested that basically is a complete, total giveaway, which is the true open source model. And then on the other end, you have people who have patents on a technology who want to have you knock on their door if you're going to be going commercial with, you know, let's say you use the design, you build what's on the open source page, and you tweak it, you improve on it, and you want to take it to market. They say, you know, talk to us about a license. You know, we've got a patent on it. So that's kind of the other extreme of a quasi-open source. You know, the plans are out there on the net, the full set of plans to build a working device. But if you want to do something commercial, you have to do a license. Do you see both? Would you accommodate both extremes in your model?
Actually, it does. But when you're talking about a vehicle specification, you really have to be careful, because some of these parts are safety critical. And as well as the car itself, it has to go through a certain safety certification before you can sell it, correct? So you really need a central body to control the specification. Otherwise, it's going to be very dangerous. Now, let's go back to our open design model for a second. Now, our vehicle is designed by an international team of experts. Pretty much like open source software, except except that it is actually hardware. It's not an open source software. It's hardware. Similar to open source, the technical data is actually protected by a public license that we drafted. You can adapt it, you can modify it, and the trick to make the hardware, open source hardware to work is to specify an interface to a particular component. Let's say I don't want to design a tire, for example. I don't want to design every single nuts and bolts in the car, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can just create an interface specification that says, hey, I need a tire of this specification. Then I can go to, you know, other vendors and see if they can supply us with these tires. So I don't have to reinvent the wheel, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And the same idea applies to what you're talking about. Some people want to keep their design proprietary, right? But there are some open specifications out there that they can build their parts to, but they can keep their manufacturing process or their patents proprietary, as long as you fit into the specification that the vehicle requires. That's what is necessary.
Okay, that said, at the end of the day, what percentage of this vehicle is going to be open source and what percentage is going to be off the shelf from existing technologies, kind of a plug-and-play type of thing like the tires?
I can't say ultimately, because this project is ongoing, right? Eventually,
hopefully
everything would be open. But by 2009, I could give you a pretty good projection. I guess by 2009, the motors are going to be off the shelf. The batteries and the ultra caps are going to be off the shelf. A lot of the interior parts are going to be off the shelf. Tires, obviously, the wheels and tires are going to be off the shelf. What we're designing, what we can complete the design by 2009 would be this frame, body panels, windows, for example, the control electronics, meaning the power management part of it would be the open design part. So a pretty good portion of it would be open source.
Mm-hmm. What is going to be the primary contributor to the 100 mile per gallon benchmark?
Well, it's hard to say. It's really a combination of a lot of things. Weight reduction is a prime driving factor, I would say. We have, like you mentioned before, our kernel vehicle is a 7-passenger SUV, but it weighs about 1,500 kilograms, meaning about 3,000 pounds or so, which is about the same as a regular passenger car. So weight is one driving factor. And the electrical architecture is also another contributing factor. Has to be highly efficient, first of all. Has to support regenerative braking, which is another thing that we have to implement. And then there are other things like we have a four motor four wheel drive configuration, so we don't have transmission or differential and all that, and that saves a lot of weight and complexity as well.
Are you going to go with the plug-in option from the very beginning, or is that not going to be something you'll include?
No, that will be included, yes. Because the bare-bone version of the vehicle, which we call the kernel is really, the word kernel actually means core, meaning it's the basic set of features that an electric car would have. So the basic model is going to be an electric car. that, you know, you obviously need a charger for. And then on top of that, the power source or the auxiliary power generator, which could be run on gasoline or diesel, is something that you can buy as an option. And that is actually another feature of the kernel vehicle, is that you can swap out the auxiliary power generator a few years down the road. You say, oh, gasoline is too expensive, I want to switch to diesel. You can buy a diesel generator off the shelf, and you can swap it in just a few hours.
I know with the hybrid world in general, there's kind of two schools of thought. One is what we see on the road today for the most part, which is an internal combustion engine as the primary source, and then you have regenerative braking and a battery bank basically to contain that. The other school of thought is where you have electric motors as the primary driver, and you actually have your internal combustion engine or other generator source is actually charging your batteries as its function. There's no drivetrain from the internal combustion engine to the wheels. The wheels are driven by electric motors only. Which direction are you going in your model?
We are taking the second approach that you mentioned. Basically what we're trying to do is to separate the propulsion system from the power generator so they can both evolve separately. Right now, for example, like a Prius, you can't really detach the engine from the remaining of the drivetrain. So you have to evolve them at the same time, which slows down the process, in my opinion. So what we're trying to do is to define the electrical architecture so that the propulsion system could exist by itself, and you have a power generator added on top of it, and then you can redesign one or the other without affecting the other one.
And in terms of the performance, are you going to be trying to have a good kick? Let's say somebody wants to be able to accelerate quickly into traffic. Are you going to allow for some kind of a surge capability, or is the car going to be, for lack of better terminology, a bit wimpy?
No, it's actually designed to match a performance SUV. We've specified the vehicle so that the linear acceleration and the lateral acceleration will be similar to a Porsche Cayenne, which will do 0 to 60 in under 9 seconds, and that's the target we're shooting for. And the way we do that is with a combination of ultra caps and a high-performance battery like nickel metal hydride or lithium ion. Right now, I think we're leaning towards nickel metal hydride for now because of the cost issue with lithium ion batteries.
What about the EE store batteries, which are capacitor-based battery that I believe the I can't remember the name of the company that has, I don't know if it's an exclusive, but they're definitely using that battery system. You're familiar with the ones I'm talking about? It can be charged in 5 minutes for a 500-mile range.
What is the name of the company again?
EE Store, 2 E's, S-T-O-R.
I'm not sure which one you're talking about. But if it's a capacitor-based, then it would be similar to what we're using, except that we have a combination of both. We have a ultra-capacitor as well as a regular rechargeable battery. Capacitor usually gives you a very high power-to-weight ratio, but it doesn't store a lot of energy. So you have to have another battery system that gives you the power the energy density that you're going to need. Lithium ion is a very good candidate. It stores about four times as much as a lead acid battery. And it certainly stores a lot more than what a capacitor can handle. But the capacitor can really deliver the power density that you're going to need.
One of the things that we cover regularly in our news is new engine designs. There are a lot of better ways to run fuel than what the internal combustion engine typically does. And like I said, we have an index of different engine designs, and just off the top of my head, I'm guessing we have at least 40 different designs that are far superior to what Detroit is cranking out in the cars that are coming, you know, in our vehicles today. I'm just curious, as you look at the different engine designs, are you finding the same thing that there are many better designs, and are there any that you are honing in particularly on right now, or is that fairly open right now?
Well, the approach that FSM has always been taking is try to find a technology that is affordable to most people. Because we're really not targeting the high-end market, we're targeting the general public, trying to sell more vehicles than, you know, unlike some company who is selling like a 100K plus electric vehicle to some smaller population of people. We're really targeting a larger population. We like to use more proven technologies. For example, Volkswagen have a TDI engine, 1.2 liters, three cylinders, and that is actually a pretty good size for to use as a generator. So that was one of the options that we're considering, amongst others.
So rather than necessarily go with cutting edge everything, you would be going with things that are more tried and true, so that this is a well proven design, not something that the bugs are going to you're not going to be working out bugs on stuff. You're going to be working with stuff that's been just got some good hours on it.
Correct. Yeah. That's the correct thing, because we don't have a lot of time till the beginning of the X Prize contest. We only got 2 years, so we'll be looking at technologies that are more proven. We use a scale that Department of Defense uses called the technology readiness level. And then the Department of Defense uses a lot of, use that to gauge the suitability of the technology in their current vehicles. So we will be using a similar approach.
So quite pragmatic.
Right. We don't want to try anything new and expensive. We want to try something that is proven that we can put into market in a reasonably short amount of time.
Well, some of the newer technologies are not necessarily more expensive, even though they're more expensive than they will be 5 years from now. But they're even in their first and second iterations, even first hitting the marketplace, they would be lower price, because they're so much more efficient than what is coming from Detroit.
I agree with that, and we're looking out for these kind of technology and trying to incorporate some of that into our vehicle as well. And we're seeking commercial partners as well, trying to develop that.
In terms of design, what are some of your cutoff points? Because I realize even there's always going to be new ways to do things coming along, but you've got to lock into a certain design at some point to meet your deadlines. What are some of your lock-in points, your timelines?
We'll implement several design reviews as part of our design process. Our preliminary design review is coming up in a couple of months. As an exit criteria of that review, we requires that all the system level requirements should be locked down by then, so we can do our detailed design work like schematics, CAD drawings, for example. So what we're doing right now, we're drafting all the system level specification and requirements and building computer models trying to verify certain parameters. And as we exit from that preliminary design review, we'll be sure that these are all feasible, technologically feasible, as well as making the end product affordable to the general public. The preliminary design review is going to be a public review also. So when we come up with the presentation material, we'll put that on the website and get feedback from everybody.
Now, when you talk about this lockdown point, I would imagine, you're working toward version 1.0. Meanwhile, version 2.0 is going to be on the drawing board and is going to be in process. What portion of your team or group will you allocate to version 2.0 development, and what a portion to version 3.0? Are you going to be working on version 3.0 while you're still working on version 1.0? And what proportion of your team are you going to allocate to version 2 and version 3?
Well, it's really hard to say at this time because we're really working on 1.0 right now.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it's also a voluntary basis. So if you want to work on 2.0, you're welcome to do so. But of course, there are ongoing work that needs to be done on 1.0 as well. Just trying to finish that off.
I guess once you lock down 1.0, any new idea that comes along automatically becomes 2.0.
Right. That we'll have an online forum type of things to gather ideas or feature requests from the users or the open source community on how to improve the product. So that's very similar to open source software, essentially.
Now, you were talking about something earlier with the targeting the general public, and I had a question that came up regarding earlier in the conversation you were talking about 130 engineers from around the world volunteering on this project, putting in time on a volunteer basis. I'm wondering, when you talk about a vehicle that's going to be going to market at some point, somebody's going to be making some money, and how do you decide who makes money and who doesn't? Right now it's a voluntary project, but when money starts flowing, people are going to want to start getting a piece of the action, and how do you decide who gets what, and will there always be a volunteer portion, or will there be a will you start retroactively paying people for the work that they are doing now voluntarily?
That is not very likely. What we're looking for, I mean, you're right. I mean, eventually some money will flow into our organization when we start selling these products. What we want to do is to establish a facility that supports the future development of this vehicle, right? And then obviously we're going to have a staff. We're going to have a core group of engineers that we need to hire to support this ongoing effort. I don't envision ever distributing the money as a profit to anybody who join us in a voluntary basis. We have suppliers. We're going to have suppliers. If we're going to build a vehicle, we're going to have suppliers. And money are going to be made in the suppliers level, not necessarily in the vehicle level. You see what I'm saying?
So the people who make the tires and who build the components, they'll be getting the money. But the brain trust that came up with the idea for the vehicle will not be getting any money?
Right, that's the whole idea that's the whole idea of breaking an entry and breaking the barrier to entry into the automotive market is to have a non-profit vehicle platform that alternative fuel technology can be used on. And if we start distributing profit by selling this platform, then it really defeats the purpose.
But even a non-profit doesn't mean that there's no money being made.
I mean, we're gonna have to pay the staff. We're gonna have to pay for our facility. But in terms of ownership or distributing profit as shares or as dividends, that is not going to happen. We are a 501c registered nonprofit, so we are not legally allowed to do so.
I understand that in a 501c3, when money comes in, it has to go toward the accomplishing of the mission statement of the entity, not toward making the executives rich. And that's the difference between a non-profit and a for-profit. And still, you know, you're going to have personnel involved in this operation. There needs to be coordination of tasks. There needs to be engineers who are working through the safety measures. You've got people who are going to be doing testing and independent analysis of safety. You know, they're going to be on the payroll. I guess the question is, how do you separate the people who are receiving money, not necessarily in a profit mentality of getting really rich, but in the process, in the mentality of making a living? You know, you, for example, I would imagine are going to be on the payroll. You know, this is going to become a full-time task for you where you will be making a living doing this. And as part of a non-profit organization, am I correct?
Well, yeah, which is just like any other non-profit organization. Mm-hmm. You reimburse your employee based on their skill set, based on the job duties, and you come up with a fair market value for any person on your payroll, as far as all the contractors that you hire, for example, to do safety analysis. Let's say we have an independent engineering house to do our safety analysis of crash tests, for example, and those need to be evaluated based on the fair market value, and we're not allowed to pay anything higher than the fair market value.
Right.
That's, non-profit doesn't mean that you can't pay anybody, right? You pay them a fair amount so that you can continue working towards your mission.
Are you already to the point now where there's enough funds on the inflow side that you are able to tackle this as a full-time job?
No, actually, I have not been paid anything personally. All the time that I've put in so far has been voluntary. So that gets to a very good point. I mean, we need donations. We need donation to keep going. I mean, designing a new vehicle from scratch. You're right. I mean, we can get a lot of free engineering hours from all the volunteers, but eventually, when we start to build things, when we start to test these vehicles, we need a healthy cash flow.
That's a very ambitious project. You're talking about an industry that is typically a $1 billion industry.
Exactly, but I think it could be done. I mean, if everybody could contribute $50 or $100, we'll make our target pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. Do you have some of that going on?
Actually, yes. We have some money coming in, but it's not significant enough that we could actually say that our prototype vehicle is covered. No, the prototype vehicles are. I mean, if you talk to any industrial experts, they would say that the first prototype, say for the X Prize, would cost you somewhere between $5 to $10 million. And we're nowhere close to that yet, but we're working on it. And I hope that all the people who are listening to this program help contribute to that as well.
Yeah. What about some other revenue centers? Do you put Google Ads on your site, for example, that could bring in some revenue, at least cover the cost of your website?
Actually, that is very minimal. The money that we got is maybe $20 a month, just enough to cover the website. It's not significant enough. We have other revenue streams that we're considering, like sponsorships, commercial sponsorships. For example, we're gonna have a booth in this upcoming Santa Monica Art Car Expo. We were there last year as well. This year, we're gonna have a booth there, and we're probably looking for some sponsorship there as well. Other revenue streams include government sources, for example. We're also pursuing government funding and also private foundations funding as well. But so far, we haven't gotten any confirmation yet.
In 2 months, when you lock in on some of your systems so that you can then design the system based on those individual components, could the systems that you lock into, for example, the tires, let's use Firestone, and you could use Firestone as your sponsor, for example. Is that part of the model you're considering?
Not necessarily. I mean, you buy from them doesn't mean that you have to list them as a sponsor. We're looking for commercial partners who wants to be a future supplier. I can give you one example that it might be too early, but what we are talking to a composite supplier. What they're really willing to do is to give us material support, engineering support, in exchange for future businesses with us, and also some promotional opportunities. So I'll be pursuing similar approaches with other vendors as well. So it's a combination of future business and and advertising opportunities.
That would work. Now, your ambition of being two generations ahead of the existing SUV market or the existing hybrid market is hugely ambitious and maybe a bit precocious, don't you think?
Well, actually, being two generations ahead, you really have to think two generations ahead of time, ahead of what we are right now, because by the time you get to production, you'll be one generation ahead, right? The reason why I said it's two generations ahead is that, you know, we are not just implementing hybrid technology. We're also, looking a little further into how alternative fuel businesses could play a role in part of the development, as well as we have some exciting new technology that we will be implementing as well.
When you talk about open source, can anyone in the world go to your design group and watch on?
Sorry, say it again?
When you talk about open source, is it something that anyone in the world could go to your forum where you're discussing the different modalities and watch on?
Yes, actually, our design works are done offline and then put onto the website for other people to review. Some of that is a little it's a little slower than the actual design process, because we're a little bit ahead of what we have on the website right now. We have a media wiki software loaded, and we are using that as a PDM system or PLM system, product data management system. We have a build of material on it, as well as some of the specification and design work. So yes, eventually you will be able to access that online.
What's to keep Toyota and Honda and other competitors from watching what you're doing and implementing? Is the open source license that says once this is open, it must stay open? Is that what keeps them from using it?
No, I don't really stop them from using it. There's a little bit of honesty there, I expect, from the automakers. That's also a challenge to us, because we have to open everything by our charter, right? But that doesn't mean that it's open. It's not public domain per se. There are licensing terms attached to it. So what we're asking for from the automakers is, if they use some of that technology, then they would give us something back in return, a reasonable amount of funding, for example. Right. But, if Toyota or GM or Ford decided to use some of that technology, obviously, that's a great thing.
My understanding with some of these big companies, such as IBM, and of course that's a different industry, we're talking about automobiles here, but maybe some of the electrical components, but some of these big companies have no compunction against going in and grabbing a patent technology and basically saying, see you in court, it might cost us $40,000 to fight you, or $400,000, or even $4 million to fight you. Meanwhile, we make $40 million in profit based on this technology, so it's pocket change for us. We'll go ahead and see you in court and fight you over your patent and be slapped on the wrist. Meanwhile, we make lots of money.
Well, Right. I mean, that's an ongoing legal challenge for any open source project as well, right? Microsoft has been trying to take down Linux for a while, for example. There are other examples as well. I mean, it's an issue that we have to look out for. We will utilize the patent system as it is today, and we have several preliminary patent registered and it's owned by the nonprofit organization itself. So it will be used to the good of all mankind, but that kind of protects us from technology being stolen in the wrong way.
But when you start going in that direction, let's say you have these 130 engineers, they come up with an idea, you take that to a patent owned by your nonprofit, is there not a sense I'm lacking for a word. Somebody who is involved in the project, an engineer, one of the 130, maybe was more involved than others. I know in any organization, some people pull more of their weight than others. And the person who's really pulling their weight, doing a lot of work on the engineering end of it, isn't he going to be feeling a bit slighted that he wasn't included financially or even in credits on this patent that's filed? Maybe his name should have been on the patent. Instead, it's just the organization that's listed. Is he going to be feeling bad and then he drops out and he no longer is involved and you lose his contribution? How do you keep that human aspect from derailing the good intentions of your project?
Actually, that is not true. That is we have the individuals listed on the patent as well. So it's our intention to give people the credits that they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the patents, the names of the individuals are listed, and as well as the organization. The organization is the owner of the patent, but the inventors would be listed individually.
So maybe it takes a special breed of engineer to be involved in the open source project in the beginning?
We have a core group of people in LA and also in the Netherlands controlling the core specifications of the vehicle. So, we have a expert group there to make sure that everything works with each other. And achieving what we're trying to accomplish in the vehicle level.
We've got just about another minute. Is there something we've not talked about that you wanted to include in this discussion?
No, I guess I just want to reiterate the fact that we are a nonprofit organization. We have, a right mixture of skills, but we still need, the public's support to get us to where we want to be. So I encourage everybody to go to our website, osgv.org, read more about our project, and perhaps make a donation as well.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on with us today, David. We've been talking to David W. Lee from the Society for Sustainable Mobility. Their website is the letters of the name of the project, Open Source Green Vehicle, so osgv.org, to find out more if you want to participate as an engineer or you want to donate or you just want to watch on. You can see what they're doing there. Again, they are coming up with a mid-size hybrid electric vehicle. It would be an SUV, sit 7 passengers, reach top speeds of 120 miles per hour at 100 miles per gallon. And they hope to be 2 generations ahead of the existing hybrid cars, which by the time they get to market or by the time they have the prototype out in a couple of years with the XPRIZE, they'll be at least one generation ahead of the then hybrid cars on the market. Very worthwhile project. And again, you can go to osgv.org to read more about them. And we'll probably have a feature page on our website at pezwiki.com about them as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Allen.
You've been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.